My dear friends, a great religion can be studied in many ways. It can be studied in its theology, in its doctrines, in its laws, in its observances, in its history. Personally, I believe that a great religion can be best understood through its prayers and its mode of worship. For all these foregoing things to which I have referred come ultimately to be reflected in the prayers of a great religion. The communal prayer, these communal prayers which have endured, which have passed through the sifting and the screening of the centuries, and which have remained dear to the hearts of the worshippers, are, in my judgment, the best and the truest index of the essential meaning and message of their religion. For in these prayers, both the hearts and the minds of the faithful through the centuries are reflected. These liturgical compositions constitute, as it were, the music of the religious experience of a people, the most subjective and the truest reflection of what is in the mind and in the soul of the devotee of the particular faith. Judaism, if my approach is a correct one, is therefore also best revealed in its great prayers. Prayers unique to Judaism and unique to the synagogue, which itself is a unique institution in the religious life of mankind. The eminent Christian scholar and historian of religion, Robert Herford, writes the following: "With the synagogue began a new type of worship in the history of humanity, the type of congregational worship. In all their long history, the Jewish people have done scarcely anything more wonderful than to create the synagogue. No human institution has a longer, continuous history, and none has done more for the uplifting of the human race." And another eminent Christian scholar, Professor Moore, wrote the following: "The consequences of the establishment of such a rational worship for the whole subsequent history of Judaism was immeasurable. Its persistent character, and it is not too much to say the very preservation of its existence through all the vicissitudes of its fortunes, it owes more than anything else to the synagogue. Nor is it for Judaism alone that it had this importance. It determined the type of Christian worship, which in the Greek and Roman world of the day might otherwise easily have taken the form of a mere mystery. And in part, directly, in part through the church, it furnished also the model to Mohammed. Thus, Judaism gave to the world not only the fundamental ideas of these great monotheistic religions, but the institutional forms in which they perpetuated and propagated themselves. Now, the synagogue was preeminently a place of public worship. The temple in Jerusalem was, of course, preeminently the place of sacrifices. With the synagogue, a new form of religious organization, as well as a new mode of public worship, worship disassociated from sacrifices and ritual, came into existence, not only for the Jewish people, but for the followers of other great religions. Judaism developed communal worship, praying together as a group. These prayers of our people developed through the centuries, first orally, transmitted from parent to child, from teacher to pupil, later on collected in a prayer book, in a siddur. The first collection of such prayers formally made was around the 9th century of the Common Era in Babylonia. But these prayers, of course, were far more ancient than the 9th century. Now, this siddur contains many noble, magnificent prayers. And no single lecture can do justice to all of them. I have selected for our discussion this morning just two of these ancient prayers of our people, which reflect the very essence of our religion and the very soul of Judaism. The most important of all the prayers in our prayer book is, of course, the Shema. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. It is part of the daily worship of our people. It was part of the worship even in the temple before the synagogue was ever founded. The Shema is at the heart both of the morning and the evening services and of every service, of every festival, and of every holy day. The Shema is recited when the Torah is taken out from the ark and exalted prior to its being read on the Sabbath and on the holidays. The Shema is the very climax which culminates the worship on the Day of Atonement, that Holy of Holies day dedicated to the spiritual ennoblement of our lives. The Shema is recited by Jews facing death. It was on the lips of our martyrs who died al Kiddush Hashem, for the sanctification of God's name. It was always regarded by our people as the holiest of all prayers, which must not be interrupted even to respond to the salutation of a king. For in the Shema, one is addressing himself to the King of Kings, to God himself. It consists of just 6 words, taken from the book of Deuteronomy, the 5th book of Moses, chapter 6, verse 4. It is more in the nature of a proclamation or a declaration than a prayer. But this proclamation which changed the religious history of mankind, is the very source from which all prayers flow. If we believe that God exists, and that God is one, and that He is the creator of the universe, and the master of our destinies, then it is good to sing praises unto God. Ki na'im v'nava tehillah l'Adonai. This precious jewel of a prayer of 6 words was not long permitted to remain without an appropriate setting, so that Shema is immediately followed by the Ve'ohavta, which is a continuation of Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. Here is a great, unique teaching of Judaism. This one God which the Jew proclaims is a God who is to be loved. Now the ancients had gods whom they revered, whom they worshipped, whom they feared. But we find very few prayers among all the peoples of antiquity, and very little literature of a sacred character which speaks of the love of the worshipper for his God. Because the gods of the ancients were the personifications of the forces of nature, powerful, painfully baleful. The worshipper did not come into intimate, spiritual, mystic communion with the one God of the universe, whom he could love with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his might. Judaism was the first religion of mankind which taught the love of God. And this Shema is followed not only by the Ve'ohavta from the same chapter 6 of the book of Deuteronomy, but it is followed also by another selection from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 11. And it shall come to pass, if you will hearken unto my words diligently, and so forth, which announces another fundamental doctrine of Judaism, that of retribution. This one God of the universe proclaimed in the Shema is a providential God who rules and administers his universe according to basic principles of justice and of love. If God's will is obeyed, the world will be a good world. If God's will is flouted, it will be a world of misery and unhappiness. There is reward in the world, in God's world, and there is punishment. Not always as man conceives of reward and punishment. Not always as man would administer reward and punishment. But as God, the God of justice and compassion, who sees all things from beginning to end, would administer it. And the second biblical passage, after the Ve'ohavta, after V'haya im Shamoa Tishmeu, is followed by another one from the book of Numbers, chapter 15, which, as in the first few words of the Ten Commandments, the people are reminded that the God whose unity they proclaim is the God who brought them out of the land of Egypt, the God of their history, who made them a free people and summoned them to become a holy people, a covenanted people, to carry this spiritual truth which was revealed unto them and to all the nations of the world. Now this is the Shema. the unity of God, the love of the God of justice and of mercy, loyalty to God's Torah, the duty of teaching and spreading it to the world, and the historic mission of the people of Israel, which had been redeemed from slavery and from the superstitions of Egypt for that very purpose. Now, very early in the development of our liturgy, it was prescribed that this Shema, in its setting, with the Vohafta, with the Hayayim Shemoa Tishmeu, with the passage from the book of Numbers, that this Shema is to be preceded by two prayers and followed by one, Shnayim Lefanea, Ve'achat Le'acharea. Prayers which expatiate, which more fully develop the implications of this Shema. The first of these two prayers which precede the Shema is called the Yotzer prayer and extols God as the Yotzer, the creator of the world. God who created all things, who forms light and darkness, the God who renews every day the work of creation. This prayer concludes, as you concluded that prayer this morning, Baruch ato Adonai, Yotzer am Orot. Blessed art thou, O Lord, who creates all the lights of the world. Now, implied in this prayer, if you read it carefully, is a rejection of dualism, a rejection of Zoroastrianism, the religion of the ancient Persian peoples with whom the Jews were frequently in the closest contact. Zoroastrianism, you will recall, maintained that the world was ruled by two cosmic forces, or two rival deities, the God of light and the God of darkness, the God of goodness and the God of evil, and that these two deities were in everlasting conflict one with another. Judaism rejected this dualism. Judaism maintained that God is the creator, as we read in this prayer, both of light and of darkness. Or as the great prophet of the Babylonian exile, Isaiah, who knew of the religion of Zoroastrianism, stated, God is Yotzer Or, the creator of light, Uvore Choshech, and the fashioner of darkness, Ose Shalom, he creates peace, Uvore Ra, and also creates evil, which must be converted by the labors of men into good, into peace. Ani Adonai, Ose Kol Ele, I the Lord, create all these things. And so this Yotzer prayer is a rejection of dualism in religion. And implied in this prayer is also a rejection of what has come to be known as pantheism. That philosophy, which through history took on a variety of forms, which in modern times was propounded by the philosopher Spinoza, maintains that the universe is God, or that the universe is formed out of one substance, which is God. Judaism, however, maintained that while God is immanent in the universe, he also transcends the universe. God is not absorbed by the universe which he created, any more than an artist is absorbed by the works of his own creation. God is not identical with the world. He is not one with the world. The world is a free creation of God. And so we read in that magnificent Psalm 102, Of old thou didst lay the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the works of thy hands. They will perish, but thou dost endure. They will wear out like a garment. Thou changest them like a raiment, and they pass away. But thou art the same, and thy years have no end. So that in this prayer of God the Creator, you have a rejection of two philosophies or theologies which had many followers through the ages, both dualism and pantheism. Now the second of these two prayers which are prescribed to precede the Shema is called the Ahava Rabbah, the great love. With abounding love hast thou loved us, O Lord our God, and great and overflowing tenderness hast thou shown us. This is a prayer which thanks God for having given the Torah unto our people, and prays to God to enlighten our eyes in this Torah, to give us understanding to comprehend it fully, to learn it and to teach it, to practice it, to give us singleness of heart to love and revere it, and concludes with the words, Baruch ato Adonai, Habocher be'amo Yisrael be'ahava. Blessed art thou, O Lord, who has chosen thy people in love. And in this prayer, there are two profound and occasionally misunderstood doctrines of our people. There have been those critics of Judaism who have frequently charged that Judaism suffers from a heavy load of legalism, the burden of the law. Israel was saddled by a Torah which imposed upon them many regulations. So many, they maintain, that they actually stifled the free spiritual life of the people. Judaism is a religion of dry legalism. Frequently in the past, that charge was made, especially by apologists or propagandists of other faiths. Now, certainly when you read this prayer, Ahava Rabbah, the great love, this exalted prayer thanking God for the privilege of having been selected to receive the Torah, and for the great love which God has demonstrated to the people for having taught them these Chukei Chaim, these statutes of life contained in the Torah, and asking God for further enlightenment so that they will come to understand more and better and practice more fully this Torah. Lahavin, lahaskil, lishmoa, lilmod, lilamed, lishmor, lahasot, lakayim, as called divrei Talmud Torah, the Yahava. To understand, to discern, to hear, to learn, to teach, to observe, to practice, and to preserve all the words of this Torah in love. Certainly when one reads this prayer, one does not get the impression that the people of Israel regarded the Torah as a burden. A burden is something you want to get rid of, not something you want to add to. And the second profound truth, which was frequently subjected to misunderstanding by critics of Judaism, is contained in this idea of selection, of bechira, of having been chosen. Many have interpreted that to mean that the Jews were arrogant, and proud, and thought of themselves as the exclusive children of God, as being preferred by God for special status or for special privileges. When you read this prayer, which concludes with the words, HaBocher Be'amo Yisrael Be'ahava, who chose his people Israel in love, what does this selection refer to? To conquest? To domination? To riches? To prosperity? To rule other peoples? To racial superiority? Nothing of the sort is contained in this prayer. What the prayer says is, Uvonu v'charto mikolam v'loshon, thou hast chosen us from all peoples and from every tongue. V'keraftanu l'shimcha ha'gadol, in that thou didst bring us near to thy great name in truth. Thou hast chosen us from all peoples and tongues, in that thou hast brought us near to thy great name, to worship thee and to proclaim thy unity in the world in love. Ullachedcha b'yahava, to proclaim thy unity in love to the world. This is the selection. The Jewish people, because it was the first to recognize the existence of one God, was thereby commissioned by God to be the servant of this great revolutionary idea, and to go out into the world and preach it to mankind, to live by it. It implied the cross and the crown of a religious leadership to mankind. If this is pride, it is a legitimate pride, but it's far more than pride. It is a commitment, a heart commitment, a dedication, for which Israel paid a terrible price. And the concluding prayer at the end of the Shema, which was prescribed by the rabbis, which begins with Emet v'yatziv, true and firm, beloved and fearful is thy word unto us, forever and ever. This closing prayer, which closes the whole Shema complex, if you wish, does in fact carry out the implication of this doctrine of the choice of Israel. It is, first of all, we are reminded in this prayer, a binding obligation, al avoteinu, upon our fathers, ve aleinu, and upon us, al baneinu, upon our children, al dorotenu, and upon our generations, al kol dorot zera Yisrael avadecha, and upon all the generations of the seed of Israel, thy servant. And it suggests in the prayer the suffering which this role of leadership would bring upon the people, the suffering which, being different and standing alone in the face of a world steeped in paganism and heathendom, remaining a permanent minority in the world, the discrimination, the disabilities, the persecutions which this role would bring to the people. And rightly, therefore, this prayer closes with the Tzur Yisrael, O Rock of Israel, arise to the help of Israel. Baruch Ata Adonai, Ga'al Yisrael, blessed art thou, O Lord, the Redeemer of Israel. This is the Shema, the very heart of the service. The Shema is then followed by other prayers, the Amida, personal prayers, prayers of petition, different kinds of prayers. But here we have the glowing heart of Judaism revealed in this tremendous proclamation of the unity of God and of all of its implications. There's the theology of Judaism in the form not of abstract statements, of logical definitions, but in the form of prayer. There is the music of Judaism in the Shema. I want to say a word about another prayer, the Olenu, the adoration. The Olenu comes at the conclusion of every one of our services. Originally, it belonged to the service of the New Year, the Rosh Hashanah, and was recited in connection with the blowing of the shofar. But the prayer was so magnificent and so popular that the people decided to introduce it into every service of every day of the year. It's a very ancient prayer, and it's divided into two parts. The first part is an expression of thanksgiving to God for having delivered Israel from the darkness of heathendom, of polytheism, of idolatry, and for having enabled Israel to recognize that God is one and that there is none else. That is already reflected, of course, in that group of prayers of the Shema. The second part is an exalted and confident expression of a hope that the day is not far distant when the truth revealed to Israel will become the universal truth of all mankind, when heathendom and idolatry will be utterly destroyed on earth, when all the inhabitants of the earth will recognize that God is the God of all men, that with him that unto him every knee must bend and every tongue give homage. When all men will accept the dominion of God and all will be ruled by the universal law of God. When all evildoers will turn back to God and the world will be perfected in a reign of righteousness under the kingdom of the Almighty. The day when the Lord will be one and his name will be one. No finer universalistic prayer has ever been written than this prayer of Aleinu. And the Jewish people was the first people to conceive of a universal religion. The historic mission of the people of Israel was not to make all men Jews, but to make all men turn to the one God of the universe. Strangely enough, this universalistic religion was frequently attacked by enemies for being nationalistic, particularistic. The only particularism which you find in Judaism is that the Jewish people conceived of itself as being, so to speak, the steward of a great idea for all mankind. Primarily responsible for this idea, challenged by its covenant to preach this idea to the world, but it never arrogated to itself this idea and claimed a monopolistic control over it. It was a dedication of an Eved Adonai, a servant to God, which constitutes, if you would call it at all, if you can call any commitment to dedication a matter of particularism. Now this marvelous prayer, strangely enough, this universalistic prayer of Israel, like the people of Israel itself, has had a checkered history. It was attacked in the Middle Ages, maligned, made to say or imply the very opposite of what it clearly states. This prayer was subjected to censorship and governmental edict. Jewish apostates, Mishumadim, seized upon this prayer and used it to malign the people and the religion which they had abandoned, just as they permitted themselves to become the chief defamers, detractors, and condemners of the Talmud, these Jewish apostates who forced fellow Jews into public disputations in an effort to discredit Judaism, and they were responsible for the burning of the Talmud time and again in the Middle Ages. The first part of this Olenu contained a verse after the one it is our duty to praise God, since he hath not made us like the nations of other lands, referring, of course, to the heathen idolaters. This verse was contained in this prayer, because they bow down to vanity and pray to a God who cannot help. A quotation, by the way, taken from the book of Isaiah, centuries before Christianity arose. This verse was interpreted to be a slur, a covered reference to Christianity. And so the whole prayer was attacked. And in Prussia, in the early 18th century, following an agitation, this verse had to be eliminated by order of the government. And the Chazan and the Cantor had to recite the whole prayer aloud to make sure that this offensive phrase was not included. But the Olenu remains the most perfect expression of universalistic faith in all the religious literature of mankind. And so these are the two prayers. There are many others, of course. Perhaps at some future time I will select some other of the beloved prayers of our people, like the Unisanet Tokev, like the Kaddish, and others to speak of. But this morning I have spoken of two of these prayers, which reflect the great doctrines of our religion, the unity of God, the universality of God, the love of God, and the loyalty towards God, the duty of carrying the truth to the world, regardless of suffering and persecution, and the great confident hope in the future, which is ruled by a good and just God.